And so your grandmother owned a lot of properties around here?
Oh, she owned property here, Elstonwick, and in Perrine.
And did your mum grow up in Elwood?
No, my mother was born in Richmond originally. My grandfather that I knew here was her stepfather. Her own father died when she was six. She was the youngest of four children, and he died of pneumonia. And they lived in on the corner of Church Street. I can't tell you the other name of the street in Richmond, and they had a dairy. They ran the dairy because my grandmother's parents had cows at Tunstall. Tunstall was subdivided as more people and immigrants came to Australia, and is now one half is Nunawading and the other half is Mitchell.
There you go. So do you remember when the boats started coming into Port Melbourne bringing lots of...
Yes, because my, the biggest lot of migrants that first arrived, oh goodness me, I haven't got photos of that. You will find them in the archives, was at the Snowy River Scheme. That's where all of the migrants came into, Port Melbourne. You'll find shiploads of them. And Stringer, what's his name, what's his first name? They live around in, Ormond Road and Helen, that's his partner. Helen Graham is her name. You know Helen Graham? Right. Now, Cliff Stringer, he was one of the men that went to the Snowy River Scheme. So if you want any information and photos and things, he's got them. Okay?
Do you remember, people travelling in, from the piers?
Oh, on a Sunday, you'd walk down to Port Melbourne from here. People did a lot of walking in those days because there was no other way of getting around but by, there used to be a tram, there was the Park Street tram, of course, would take you along to Albert Street, and you could get off there and then walk down and then walk to the pier. The boats coming in, and you'd go down there to see the boats coming in, It was very common practice to go down that far and see the boats coming in and walk along the pier to the end and walk back, which of course you can't do now. You can't get onto the pier at all. And, there used to be a cafe on that side before somebody burned it down because they wanted to build a cafe on this side. We won't go any further into that. And because there's an awful lot of suspicion over that said there wasn't, but it has to be. And so there used to be a cafe there, and you could go in there and get a lovely beautiful cup of coffee. You used to get in there. And a cup of tea. We used to love a cup of tea in those days, of course. We'd have a cup of tea. And hot scones, jam and cream.
And so was that when you were married or before you were married?
After we were married. The cafe was there. I used to walk, I'll tell you what I used to, my uncle was a minister of religion in Williamstown, on the terrace in Williamstown. And I used to walk down along the beach, and then I'd cut in Bay Street down to Williamstown Road, because Bay Street beyond that was paddock, and the sea used to, it was more or less seawater slush, all that land all down there, And because the sea used to hit up over the wall along there where all those magnificent million-dollar flats are now, that was all dung stink. And I meant it stank.
Oh, God.
You know what salty water, stagnant salt water, oh, this rifle. And all of that was down there, so you used to go up Bay Street and then round to Williamstown Road, walk right down Williamstown Road to the end and catch the punt and go across to the other side, and then you'd go just walk up two streets and walk straight down the terrace, and the church was this side of actual town of Williamstown, and that's where my uncle was the minister. He was also the padre at the Williamstown dockyards and the naval base down there. And every Saturday or every once a month he used to go down there, and he had a little car. He used to have a horse and gig, and they used to post the horse and gig home, sitting in there and giving the reins and whack the horse and take him home.
And round here, what kind of work do people do? I mean, quite a lot of people have mentioned, you know, being in the trade.
Oh yes, well my husband was a fitter and turner, marine engineer. He worked at the marine engineer shop down in off Lorimer Street, where the Footscray, you know, the bridge that goes across to the Footscray bridge from South Melbourne to Melbourne. Well, we're in the middle of that is where he used to work. They took it down to build that bridge. Took the factory down where he worked there to build that bridge.
And other people around here, what kind of...
The people that built the flats next door that lived in the big flat upstairs, Seckles, they were... He was part of the Seckle brothers that were builders. I don't know what part of the building he was in, but one was a plumber, one was an electrician, one was a builder, and then there was Papa. And he had these three sons, and he put them all into the building trade so that they could work together and save money and get things done. And so each of the brothers had built a block of flats here, Ruskin Street and down in Broadway. So they've all got a block of flats that would bring in money for them. Now, in there, Mr. Wall, what's he do? I don't know. And we had a great big, Nubian Negro. He was huge. And I forget what he did, but he was wealthy as wealthy could be. He was very wealthy. We had a school teacher, and we had another chap that lived. Oh, look, I talk about 96, it's got nothing on what used to be in the flat next door. Nothing. It was just hilarious, the people that lived in the flats in those days. The chappy in the front sat, he was a very, very nice man. He had that whole flat to himself. And
can you give us an era?
He wore the most beautiful lace frocks and huge picture hats and high-heeled shoes. And the man that was next door, he was a school teacher, and he was very shy. He hadn't really come out, and he was very shy about expressing himself in public. But the other friend had come, and they'd come in an open... like a jeep after the war. He had bought an old jeep, and they'd come and they'd get in the car, and my husband was down there at the gate and say, "Joe, darling, we're going out today." Oh, everybody did.
So what year was this?
That was in 1950s, that would be the 1950s, earlier than that. We had other people in there. They were very homely people, all business people. That was in the 1950s, but the boy, another young man, had the same as the one downstairs. He was a homosexual, and the school teacher was, and he wasn't. You know, he could never make up his mind what he was going to be. The next flat, they were in and out like yo-yos, and at the back, the big flat at the bottom of the back, the man at the front's mother lived there, and she was a very nice lady in her 60s, and she was, used to be an escort for elderly gentlemen. Elderly gentlemen can book her to take her out if they wanted someone, if they were, you know, interstate or something and wanted to take a lady out with them. And the chappy upstairs, he was a head accountant at Myers, and he lived alone, and once a month he always had, because he had so many guests, so many people on his books and everything, he used to have an open house once a month on a Sunday. But he was a magnificent pianist, and he'd start at 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and he'd always come down and he'd say, "I'm having the people today." So we'd know that if we didn't want anything, we could go out. They got a bit rowdy. But then, mind you, there were hundreds went in and out of that flat on a Sunday. The food that was partaken, there was always food. Always there was hot food and there was cold food. And he had that there from 8 o'clock in the morning, and he closed down at about 6:30 at night, except for his own media friends that came and gave him a hand and that. But he would have sheiks and all their ladies come, and they'd stay about half an hour, and then they'd go, you know, and they'd meet others and that. And then there would be all sorts of different... And notables from the theatre, stage, and notables from radio stations, big names like Pratt's and all those sort of things, they'd come and call in and pay their respects. And, you saw some magnificent cars drove up, chauffeur-driven cars, all different makes and kinds, and the frocking was varied from every type of frocking to near nude to the really lavish dress, and in the winter time it was, you'd see the reverses, you know, it was all there. And the men, some of them were just dressed in thongs, some of them had magnificent shoes that had cost you about $500 to even look at one of them, sort of thing. And the stars and that were absolutely marvellous, but we didn't try, we didn't poke. It was just lovely to, we used to go out on the back lawn and we'd lay out there, because he would play that piano, and he'd play anything from hot jazz right through the highest, beautiful symphonies that he would play them without music. He'd just sit down and whatever flowed into his mind he played, you know. But it was always, had every window in the place open so that the music scattered, everybody got the beauty of it.
And the gentleman that wore the lace dresses and the...
Oh, the bit in the front flat downstairs.
So did he go to the parties or was
it... No. Nobody in the flats intruded when he had this party once a month. And that was a business with him, because he entertained and he brought to bear business meeting business. That's what that was all about. Producer meeting star. Getting someone started in the acting or the theatrical area. All that type of thing. Making business for Myers. Bringing people in who could suggest or extend what Myers did. Opening up all sorts of areas of business where shopping areas would be needed in the future, because they'd already had High Point West, that was their first one, and of course from then on
Well, it was over quite a long period of time.
Yeah, about 8 years he was there. So every month he had one of these dues.
Now the last thing I'm going to ask you, because I probably should go because of his Christmas gathering, is about the Lonely Hearts
Club. Oh, the Lonely Hearts Club at Nicholas Building in Swanson Street. Yes,
sorry,
my mother was a member there at the Lonely Hearts Club, which had, of course, started before the war. That's when she came. Of course, she was a widow, and somebody suggested that she go in, you know, and she said, look, there's men there that are widowers and ladies that are widows, but she said, they get together once a month, and we have a dance and supper. And she said, it's just pure friendship, nothing more than friendship. So my grandmother said, well, it might be very nice to go, you never know, you might meet someone, dear. My mother had no intentions of wanting to meet anybody at all, because she just had adored my father the same as he had adored her. And anyhow, she went into this Lonely Hearts Club, and they were a nice group of people, and she used to go to the club. And now and again, she'd say, well, are you going to come with me tonight? And so I'd go. And there were a lot of theatrical people there from the, there was another club down in Elizabeth Street. The old actresses club, and there used to be a gentleman there, he was 70, and he always used to get me up for the Pride of Erin, and he'd high kick with his feet right up into the air, and he'd swing me around into the centre and everything, and he always used to say, I'm falling in love with your daughter, and my mother said, no way. And then when the war broke out, we found out, or they found out, that there were a lot of young men, of course, on transit coming through from New South Wales or travelling through from South Australia, and they were brought down from New South Wales to be put into units or squadrons onto ships in the naval base, and it was done here because we were the most southern point, and it was safer for them to be able to be here for a length of time, and they did whatever training they had to do here, and then they were forwarded on overseas. So they were all young, during the Second World War, the beginning of it, in those first years, there was no one under 20 recruited at that time, like there had been in the First World War. You had 15 and 16 year olds in the First World War got in. Well, they made sure that there was none of that to be, as far as possible, to get into the Second World War. So the first 2 years of recruiting, no one was under 20. But there were still young lads home, missing mum's cooking and things like that. And so they used to send out an invitation, not all the time, but send out invitation to the different Army and Navy and Air Force in Elizabeth Street. They used to take it down there. It was in the building on the corner then. It was an old bank building, great big building, and recruiting area all down there. Gradually more was taken over by the government for recruiting and general offices, mail distribution to the troops and everything. And so we'd take our petition down there asking if any of the boys would like to come for an evening. And they used to come, you know, there'd be about 20 of them had come.
What floor was it on?
It was about the fifth floor or the, I don't know whether it was the third or the fifth one now, I can't remember.
Did you look out onto
Kent
Street, or did you look
out onto Swanson Street? Yeah, out onto Swanson Street. And that is where I met my future husband.
Beautiful.
And that was in 1940, I met him there.
Now I'm going to come back another day.